Those of you who are visiting with us today as parents, we are especially honored to have you in our presence and in our midst today. You're special to us because your children are special to us. And those connected with this congregation spend a lot of time thinking about and working with and being with your children. And they've enriched our lives this year. I believe this has been the best year we've ever had since I've been here. And it seems that the thinking of all was reflected by Brother Sawyer this morning when he said to me that this was the best Board of Trustees meeting, I think you said, you've ever had that in your memory. And that seems to be a reflection of the year. Today, many of you will come to the end of your college career, at least on the undergraduate level. And it's to you, especially, but to all of us who have been influenced by Christian education, to whom I direct these remarks today. Because we're a people, those who have been touched by the information about Jesus Christ. We are a people who've been set apart. Because Christian education not only sharpens the mind, it enlightens the conscience. And that part of man which man cannot live without is sharpened and enlightened and made tender by the life and the teachings of Jesus Christ. In a time when the world is trying its best to forget that the conscience exists, and in a time when they are trying to ignore the conscience so that it might go away and leave them alone, we find ourselves as Christians praying, O God, make my conscience tender. Keep my conscience alive. Make my conscience sensitive. And for that reason, if for no other reason, we're a people set apart. But having asked God that he might make our consciences tender, and having had that prayer answered, often we find ourselves then burdened with guilt. And we find our consciences becoming a dreadful scourge that would make life at times almost unbearable. Because just as it is true that we cannot live without the conscience, often Christians find that it's intolerable to live with it. And what are you going to do with your conscience once it's been enlightened? There are those here this morning whose conscience has been enlightened, and it's hurting them. Some of you have been disciplined by the school. Some of you have been disciplined by life. Some of your consciences are hurting because you wasted last semester. Some of your consciences are hurting because your grades have reflected a mixed-up priority. In the lives of some of you, your morals in the last semester were not what they should have been. And just in general, many of you just find your life not really getting on with the job. And if most of us dwelt very long on the subject of what we are, we would find our conscience saying to us, you there, with all of your background, with your heritage, with your friends, with your parents, your home, with the education that you've received, look at yourself. Look at yourself. You ought not to be what you are. And you know, that's true. Conscience does that for us. And in this community especially, and for this I thank God, that which is excellent is held up before our eyes constantly, so that we are enlightened and our conscience does cause us to be a people set apart. But may I say this, that there cannot be really any life from just hearing you ought not be what you are. That's essential to life, but that and that alone will not bring life. It brings us a knowledge of what life ought to be, but it doesn't provide life. You really ought not be what you are. But if there's to be any spiritual life and health, if there's to be any spiritual and emotional life and health, if there's to be any spiritual and emotional and intellectual life and health, there must also be a second message. Truly, we ought not to be the way we are. But a second message that we must gain if we would be really healthy and really alive is this simple statement: no one need stay like he is. You ought not be like you are, but nobody has to stay like he is. Now that's a true principle. It's true wherever you turn in life. It's the life-giving principle that gives hope to the burdened conscience. It's the principle that gives hope and that provides the means for life to a person who is a weak, undone sinner, but who, through the grace of God, has had his conscience enlightened, he's had his eyes opened, and he's been made to see that I ought not to be the way I am. But by the grace of God, I don't have to stay the way I am. Now, in the New Testament, this is a very real principle. Romans, the 7th chapter, talks as no other passage in the New Testament, and perhaps in the Bible, speaks to the human predicament. As the conscience has fallen prey, in a sense, to lighten or to enlightenment and to light and to education, to the place that Paul says, I don't understand my own actions, for I do not do the things I want to do. I do the very things I hate. And he goes on and says that what I do is what I do not want to do, and what I do want to do, I do not do. I don't understand myself. And then he comes out with this expression of trauma that is experienced by people who've had their consciences enlightened. He said, oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of this death? And when Paul said that, he reflected the cry that every last one of us at one time or other has expressed. Oh, God, oh, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of this death? But Paul's trauma of Romans 7, out of that, he is ushered into the triumph of Romans 8, where he begins by saying, there is therefore now no condemnation to those that are in Christ Jesus. The bridge out of Romans 7 and into Romans 8 is found in the last part of Romans 7, where as an answer to the question, who shall deliver me out of this body of death, he says, I thank God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Jesus served as the bridge, and the faith that Paul had in Jesus Christ brought Paul this reassuring message. Paul, you ought not be like you are. But by the grace of God expressed through Jesus Christ, Paul, you don't have to remain like you are. You can be different. You can be delivered into what you know you ought to be. And you know, this is true in every area of life. You don't have to remain the way you are. Thank God you don't have to stay like you are. Meet this young man, David Paul Thomas. He came into my office about 10 days ago. He was about 21. At the age 15, an automobile struck him. He did permanent brain damage. He was here as a representative of the handicapped people of America. And what a representative he was. He had been struck by this car, caused this brain damage, and he was carrying a briefcase, and he came in with determined step, but awkward, and he introduced himself, and he proudly says, I am a representative of the handicapped people of America. Well, I said, well, sit down, and welcome to another group of handicapped people. I said, everybody in this church is handicapped. In one way or the other, you've hit a ripe field. We're all handicapped. Sit down and tell me about yourself. And so he told me. And as a response, in telling him, or as I asked him about his condition, I said, Paul, do you find that you're improving? He said, yes, sir. And I see no end to the possibilities. Except he said it like this. He said it with struggling pronunciation. He said, I see no end to the possibilities. He was dead serious. Boy, a chill went up my back. And I said, sir, I take my hat off to you. And I thought, my, what a young man you are. Or meet the young lady, and she's here today, I think. Shelley Morgan. I met her last Friday night. She's 22 years old. When she was 17, they discovered a tumor at the base of her brain. And she was taken to the hospital. And the tumor began to take its toll on her life and her health. She told her mother, Mother, I don't want to die. But if that's God's will, that's fine. But if it's his will that I live, that's fine. But she told her mother, I believe that all things work together for good to those that love the Lord. After some months in the hospital, she became blind. She became deaf. Her whole right side became paralyzed. And they were feeding her intravenously. And they then finally told her mother and father, take her home and treat her as well as you can. It won't be long. But that wasn't to be. Through much prayer and through great attention by her parents, she began to improve. The tumor has either diminished appreciably or has disappeared. And she began then to move one part of her little right hand or of her body, and then she began to take some faltering steps. She worked for a long time just taking one step, she said, and then she would fall into her father's arms. And then she got to where she could take two. And she thought she'd never get to where she could take three steps. This week here on the campus, this young lady walked 5,280 feet. You don't have to stay the way you are. She could have given up long ago. Shelley, are you here this morning? Dear, stand up where we can see you, would you? Where are you? Here you are, right here. God bless you. What a beautiful example. Be seated and thank you for being here. This young lady is an accomplished artist. Her right side was paralyzed. That didn't stop her. She paints with her left hand. And I've never seen such exquisite paintings. And you'll hear from her. And I want you to meet her this morning. You don't have to stay the way you are. Or take Fred Johnson, one of our members here. Fred Johnson, auto mechanic, grease monkey. Works down here at Gulf Station. Christian of about 4 years. High school education. He decided that he didn't want to stay the way he was. He became a Christian 4 years ago. This past week, he announced to me that he was going to go through the Sunset School of Preaching. He plans to give his life to preaching the good news of Jesus Christ. You don't have to stay the way you are. And may I say for Shelley and for Fred Johnson and for this young man, David Paul Thomas, let me put it in the words of David Paul, I see no end to the possibilities. Now, that same thing is true for you in your life as a Christian if you will let the principles that Jesus Christ has brought into your life be operable in your own life. You don't have to stay the way you are. True, you ought not to be like you are. Your conscience says that. But is that the only message that we hear? No. You don't have to stay the way you are. But how does Jesus transform us? That's the question. You say, oh, that's fine, that's good. But how does he do it? How does he go about transforming us? This good news that you don't have to stay the way you are is just an extension of the personal ministry of Jesus Christ. That's all it is. You don't have to stay the way you are is the whole concept of his ministry. You see, he came into Palestine and he found a lot of folks that were untogether. He found Mary from Magdala. He found Simon Peter from Bethesda, from Bethsaida. He found Zacchaeus from down in Jericho. He found a whole host of these other people whom we have come to know and to whom we've become friends. We've found that Jesus found these people untogether. All over Palestine, he found them untogether. They just weren't getting very far in their life. And so he found them like this, just people like we find all over the world. people untogether in their life. But the amazing thing about it is he didn't leave them untogether. He did not leave them as he found them. Jesus brought about such a change in the lives of these people that it has completely astonished the world. It has completely revolutionized the history of man. It's turned it completely around. And now we see no end to the possibilities that present themselves to us for changing and not remaining like we are. How did he do it? We've noticed that Jesus saw people and accepted them as they are. That was one of the basic principles of Jesus' personal relationship with people. He took them as he found them, as is where it is. And he was able to see people as they were and to accept them as they were. But there was more to that than just that. When Jesus found people as they were and accepted them as they were, he then also saw in them that which they could become. And that's where Jesus was such a beautiful example to us today. This is the basic dynamic of the transforming power that he possessed and that he performed in the lives of people. For example, when he met Simon Peter, Simon the son of John from Bethsaida, he said to him, and I think of him as he watches him come up and be introduced by his brother, he said, "So you're Simon the son of John. You shall be called Peter." And in one brief stroke, he just simply said, "Peter, this is what you can become and will become. I'll see to it." And later on, down by the Sea of Galilee, when Peter and the great draught of fishes was so overwhelmed by the presence of Jesus, Jesus said, "Don't be afraid. From now on, I'm going to make you a fisher of men." And so Jesus took that untogether clay that he had at his disposal, and he just simply didn't see it as what it was only. He saw it for what it could become. He was good at sizing people up, not only for what they were, but for what they could become. We size people up just for what they are. Oh, that's the way he is, we say. And so we categorize them, we pigeonhole them, and we stick them in there, and we never really often experience or express much confidence that they can be anything more. Jesus didn't do that. That was the dynamic. And Jesus had the way of saying, "This is what you're going to become." And that principle is just true in every area of life. Did you ever see something that nobody else thought would be worth anything? And you happen to see something in it that you thought was worth rescuing. You've seen people outside Little Rock. There's some land out there that they used to think wasn't worth anything. Now it's worth thousands of dollars per acre. Let me give you a personal example. And I think that this is due. We've received a lot of ribbing, Louie and I have, about this property we're building on. Man, I'm telling you, I've never been so embarrassed. People have just haw-hawed, you know, and poo-pooed. And in fact, one man bought it. It was so cheap, he bought it and went out to see it after he bought it. And he got out there and saw it and forfeited his $200 down payment. Another man bought it because it was so cheap, and he went out and looked at it the next morning, and he forfeited his $200 down payment. $400 down the drain. It's so unusual that I took a banker out there to look at it, and we got lost. After about an hour of wandering around, hot, thirsty, finally he said, "I give up." He said, "If you'll just get me back to town, you can have the loan." But I'll tell you what, Louie and I saw in that property something that could be salvaged. And you just wait. You just wait. With Harold Hines' help, by the way, we're going to have something out there that every one of you would want to have a part in. Jesus could do that sort of thing with people. He found these untogether people, and he just simply provided for them that power to make them become something that they were not at that time capable of being. And you know, there's such power in relationships like that. But not only did Jesus see people for what they were, he saw in them what they could become. And then the third thing that I want you to notice is that he was willing to give his life that they might become that. And there's no power more transforming than the power that emanates from a personality of a person who accepts you for what you are and sees in you what you can become, and then just simply says, "I'm going to see to it that you become that. I'm going to lay down my life for you that you might become that." And of all the forces that make a person want to be better, nothing is so powerful as the force of sacrificial love. You mark it down. You may be informed as to what you ought to be. But when a person like Jesus of Nazareth comes and accepts you as you are, when you're not what you ought to be, and then says, don't be afraid, from now on, you're going to be doing thus and so, and then lays his life down that you might become that, there's the transforming power of the love of God that makes it so that we can say, not only I know I ought not to be what I am, but it makes us then, by the power of God, be able to say, I don't have to stay as I am. This morning early, I got a phone call from Memphis, Tennessee. And Terry Smith was on the other end of the line. He said, I want to share this with you. He said, this morning at 2:54, Bill Lynn went on. And many of you know Bill. Bill was a man who epitomizes this principle. You ought not to be the way you are, and no man needs stay as he is. I've known Bill for about 25 or 30 years. And I looked up to him for years, and I thought he was just as fine a man, and he was. But somewhere along the line, Bill kind of lost his way. And his life began to deteriorate inside. Outside was like many of our lives. It was together, seemingly. But inside, things began to deteriorate. And his family life began to deteriorate. His financial life began to deteriorate. He became indebted into the thousands and thousands of dollars, $60,000 or $70,000, and he just had no hope of meeting those bills. About 6 or 7 years ago, he took bankruptcy. No, it's been longer than that. He took bankruptcy maybe 10 years ago and just simply went out clean from those debts. But Bill, though he realized that I ought not to be like that, there just seemed to be no way out. But then he turned his life over genuinely to Jesus Christ. He became what he ought to be within. And then he began to pay back that money. $10,000 here, $5,000 there, $1,000 over here, $1,000 there. He would go into the banks with $6,000 or $7,000 cash plus interest, take it in and say, here, I ought not to have done what I did. But thank God I don't have to stay as I am. Here's your money, and thank you. Bill Lynn epitomizes that. And today, early this morning, he died. And with friends and family standing around his bed, they were singing the song, O Love That Will Not Let Me Go, and In Heavenly Love Abiding. And Bill Lynn went to his Maker as proof positive that we ought not to be like we are. But nobody has to stay like he is. And if you and I, and all of us here who have been so enlightened in our conscience, if we would, with Simon Peter from Bethsaida and Mary from Magdala and Zacchaeus from Jericho and Bill Lynn from Memphis, and hundreds and millions of people from all over the world who are undergather in their lives, not really getting anywhere in life, having been informed you ought not to be the way you are. If we'll stand at the cross of Jesus Christ and look up into his face and see how he accepts us as we are, and then sees us for what we can become, and then gave his life that we might become that, all of us here today would be caused to say these two things. I ought not to be the way I am. But by the grace of God, I don't have to stay the way I am. And you know what? That's good news. That's good news. I have been crucified with the world, and the world to me, Paul said. It is no longer I that live, but Christ that lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live in faith. Faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. That was the dynamic that made Paul not remain as he was. That's the same power that will make you do the same thing. May God bless you, and may today be the beginning of the rest of your life. It's the first day of the rest of your life, and you don't have to stay the way you are. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you don't have to remain like that the rest of your life. God's made provision. You can come in faith and be immersed into Him today in your faith, having turned you back on your old life, that you know you ought not to be like this, and then turn you back on it and be immersed into Christ today for the forgiveness of those sins. He'll take you and make out of you what He wants you to be. It may be that you're a Christian. You've disappointed both God and yourself. You may have disappointed your parents. You don't have to stay like that, though. And if you would like to come and make it stated publicly, or if you just need to turn to your parents after the hour and say, I've sinned against you, do whatever it takes to make your life right and to become the kind of person Christ wants you to be. May God bless us. Make your decision while we stand and sing.